the new Justice Minister, Naomi Long, joining us this morning. Naomi, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. First of all, congratulations on your new post.
Thank you.
Edwin Poots has just said on the Knowledge Show at the very top of the programme, I don't know if you heard it or not, that as part of this extra money coming to Northern Ireland, there may be strings attached, and he has speculated that one of those strings may involve people in Northern Ireland having for the first time to pay water rates. Now, that could be £400 a head. Do you support that? Did you know about that?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that we have not just new money coming to Northern Ireland potentially as a result of the deal, but actually political leadership to match it is hugely important. So I think that's the first thing, because there was a huge amount of money here, over £1 billion in terms of confidence and supply between the DUP and government. But the result of not having political leadership is that most people still ask the question, where did it go? Because they haven't felt the benefit of it. My hope would be that as a result of the financial package, we will be able to actually do things which will impact on people's lives. And that hasn't been the case up until now.
Yeah, but Naomi, listen to what you're saying in terms of the financial package. We don't know how much we're getting.
Well, we know the conversations that have been had, Stephen. And obviously, you know, we can't take anything purely on trust, but we do have to, I think, journey fully. We've had a positive engagement with the Secretary of State. I think everyone in Northern Ireland would recognise that both he and the Taoiseach have done an extraordinary amount of work to get us to where we are today. I don't believe that having achieved that, they're simply going to walk away and leave the executive unsupported when it comes to delivery. And whether that is around facilitation or around funding, I don't think that they're going to pull the rug from under us at this delicate stage of proceedings. That's the first thing. The second thing is that in terms of the strings attached, you know, we do have to be realistic in Northern Ireland that Treasury are going to expect us to do a number of things in order to be able to get money drawn down. And there are reasons for that, because obviously they're looking at the repercussive implications in Scotland and Wales and in England. So there will be strings attached, but those strings attached aren't all negative. Some of those strings attached will be about transforming public services. I think that's good when it comes to things like health and education. We've been pushing for that. When it comes to things like water, as you know, it's Alliance Party policy that water should be mutualised and that people should receive a separate water bill. But that won't be my decision. That will be a decision for another minister. But we believe that that would open up longer-term stability in terms of funding. But we're not talking about, remember, additional charges, Stephen. We already pay for water. We pay for it in our rates. What we're talking about is having a line in that bill which identifies how much of that goes to water.
No, but Edwin,
that may be the first position that Treasury...
Yeah, but hold on a second. So Edwin Poots already this morning, we are into realpolitik now,
yeah.
And Edwin Poots was saying already this morning that, look, the strings attached might include, for example, an increase in our rates. In other words, extra charges. And if people's water rates, if we're going to have water rates, we would like to know how many of you support it and how many of you don't. Would you support
I have already said that I think that there are two elements, and you can go back to our manifesto 2016, 2017, and more recently. What we have said is that we can't expect the people of Northern Ireland to fund the legacy issue in water in terms of the deficit of investment that we've had. But we can expect to have to take responsibility for funding it going forward, because that's what happens everywhere else in the UK and Ireland. So we've got to be realistic about this. It will be a process. It will not be an immediate decision. There's a transformation that would have to go on. And you know my background professionally, though it's disappearing into the rearview mirror very quickly, but was in water and sewage and all of that. So I recognise the challenges that they face. But my challenges are injustice. That's where my focus will be. As a party, we will support colleagues to make what will be often difficult decisions, because unless we transform our public services, Stephen, we will not be able to make them sustainable for the future. And that doesn't serve the public here well. It's not about big financial hits, but you know that we have said in the past that freezing rates, freezing charges has actually been detrimental, in that we get these cliff edges where then rates shoot up dramatically and people are shocked to see their bills increase. And it makes planning for families And it makes planning for businesses much more difficult. What we need to do is take a sensible and sustainable approach to finance. And we have an opportunity now to deal with the legacy issues, the black holes that we have in our finances. But I have no doubt Treasury will demand transformation as well as investment. And that is good because if you have a problem and you throw money at it, it won't necessarily solve it. You'll just have a well-funded problem. So what we need to do is get to the point where we transform our services, put them on a sustainable footing, and then can move forward, and the public will know that what they're getting is good delivery.
Look, one of the gambles our political leaders have taken in Northern Ireland, and you're one of them who have done this, there was an option. And the first option was to try to get some type of agreement around the big, massive pillars of disagreement that we know exist in Northern Ireland. In other words, Irish language, in other words, legacy and areas like that. And then go into a new executive with those dealt with, or at least an understanding that they were dealt with. But what it seems to be, if you look at the fine detail of that deal, that deal has got you all into an executive. And if you look at the text on legacy, for example, Naomi, it essentially says that the parties will commit to best endeavours, that the parties will sit down and try to make a way through and work together. Well, you would have thought that the parties would be doing that since they were created, if they're anyway decent parties. So we do not have agreement on legacy.
But we both know that that hasn't been the case. That legacy has almost opened up as the new battleground in Northern Ireland politics.
But how is it not going to be another new battleground if it hasn't been? This is not a deal, is it? This is the deal making starting
Stephen,
now. Surely
two,
this is not a new dawn.
There are two ways we can address this. Is it a deal? Yes, I believe it is a deal because people have committed to implement it. Is it?
So what's the deal on legacy?
Is it the silver bullet to all of our problems? Then no, it isn't.
But what's the deal on legacy, for example?
Well, let me answer the question, Stephen, because it's important. If people are willing to engage constructively and positively and seek solutions, and that's what we have been trying to do for the last 3 years, if people are willing to engage on that basis, then I believe that we will find solutions to these issues. They're not insurmountable. The deal on legacy, for example, and on one element is that the Secretary of State has committed to take forward Stormont House, which the parties agreed to quite a number of years ago, has agreed to take that through Parliament in the next 100 days. Now, if you talk to anyone who has been involved in that process, they would see that as a major commitment from government and a major step forward. I, in terms of my role in justice, I'm conscious of the impact that legacy policing issues have in terms of the budget and the policing of the present. And so it's hugely important that the Secretary of State has given that undertaking because it will allow, when all of the other pieces are in place, it will allow that debate to move into a legacy piece of work and allow policing of the present to move forward. And I think, Stephen, we can look at this as glass half empty and half full. We had the same discussion that you'll be having this morning about whether or not this deal went far enough, whether everybody was going to be happy with it. And of course it's imperfect, and I said that when I spoke on Saturday. But nothing, you can't allow perfect to become the enemy of good. And good is having an executive. Good is having politicians committed to working together after 3 years of that.
Okay, but I think you're right
to hold us to account, Stephen, and you're right to have a degree of scepticism.
But I do think that one of the things that is being discussed around homes in Northern Ireland is that for those people who do wish you all the very best and actually do want you all to get on, they're wondering how you are and they're wondering if they're going to hear a sense of whether there is anything new for a solution to some of these big disagreements. For example, we've got Boris Johnson in town today and he's coming into Northern Ireland. And one of the things that the Prime Minister is doing is to legislate to stop former soldiers being prosecuted. That's what he and his government supports. Now, do you support that? And do the political parties in Northern Ireland support that?
No, I don't, because I believe that justice should treat everyone equally. I believe that in terms of, I think what he has actually referred to is not that it would stop soldiers being prosecuted, but that it would stop what they refer to, I think wrongly, as vexatious prosecutions. I think that's dealt with through the normal justice system, through investigation, through the DPP here or the Crown Prosecution Service in England. And so from our perspective, we believe that the normal checks and balances of the justice system are what we should be relying on in terms of how we deal with those issues. And that's
but the biggest party in Northern Ireland would support the former soldiers stopping being prosecuted, wouldn't they? The DPP would support
that of course doesn't come without caveats, because whilst they have said they're concerned about those prosecutions, they have also acknowledged that to change the law or to alter how those prosecutions are dealt with could have knock-on consequences for how other historic prosecutions would be dealt with that they would not be happy with. So there is a degree to which people recognise that this is not, even those who in theory would support such a deal recognise that it's not straightforward. And it's, I have to say, Stormont House is not perfect. Again, no deal ever is. But I believe it was the best way in order for us to be able to move forward. The commitment from the Secretary of State was clear, and that he will implement that. And that is what he said he would implement, not that plus, but that in the next 100 days. Let's wait and see what happens with that. And we have now, I think, an opportunity to get legacy addressed in a more
meaningful way.
Stephen, that I would be comfortable with having a differential in the justice system for any category of offender in that respect. And I have to be clear about upholding the law as it stands. If the law changes, then it'll be up to the police and the courts to implement that new law. But I would not support a change.
And when we talk about a new dawn and a new deal, you're our new Justice Minister. Have you any knowledge as to whether there has been any progress in discussions between the DUP and Sinn Féin as to the definition of a victim? Would former members of a paramilitary organisation ever be considered victims?
Well, I mean, again, I'm not aware of conversations that have happened between the DUP and Sinn Féin other than...
So what's the new dawn?
The public would... Well, Stephen, at the end of the day, we were in exactly the same situation on these difficult issues a week ago, but we weren't around the table in the executive trying to resolve the health crisis. We weren't around the executive table trying to address the crisis in our education system. We weren't around the table trying to deal with backlog of issues in justice, of delivering better engagement. And I know, for example, that you yourself have been in the prison system looking at young offenders, looking at people and how they engage with the justice system. And I think that's quite an exciting piece of work. It's something that I think is important. The jails, as you will recognise, are a microcosm of society, but with very concentrated levels of problems in terms of mental health challenges.
It's eye-opening. It's eye-opening, anxiety. Naomi. And the public will see some of the work that I've seen in there.
So we now have leadership around that. And I think, you know, so yes, Stephen, you're correct. There are still big issues. Northern Ireland is an imperfect place. We have had a very, very difficult transition from the Troubles to where we are now. But the positive to take from this is that political leaders are willing to step out in courage. And if we fail in this...
But are they? Where are we getting a sense from this? We're not getting a sense of any compromise in those big issues. Legacy, definition of a victim. I haven't heard anything.
Perhaps you need to give it more than a weekend, Stephen, for the trust to be restored and rebuilt. Give people the time to work together on the issues that really matter, that really impact on people's lives, and then to see the benefit of that and to see that that collaborative working and that sense of compromise is rewarded. Everyone has had to compromise in order to come back into government. I mean, let's be clear that that is the case. Let's not ask people, you know, let's not bend people to the point of breaking on the first day. Let's allow that compromise to settle in. Let's work it well. Let's give it a fair wind. And then when that works and people are being rewarded for it in terms of the public seeing the benefits of it, then is the time when people will say, OK, compromise is delivering results, and it's not an embarrassment, it's nothing to be ashamed of, it can be an honourable thing. Because unfortunately, unless we start to transform these conversations that we've been having into win-win rather than win-lose conversations, we won't make progress. I was actually heartened to hear what Edwin Poots said before I came on, because I was able to hear the end of his conversation. Yes, the Irish language has been politicised by parties and has become, if you like, this totemic issue. But isn't it a good thing to hear someone from the DUP actually talk about the fact that it doesn't have to be a political football, that it can be part of our shared cultural wealth. Let's actually celebrate the positives in this day and give it.
It's going to be just two, because I know you need to go too. Just two more very brief questions. You are our new Justice Minister. Do you support 50-50 in terms of police recruitment?
Well, again, that's something that I will need to take advice on in terms of the policing board and the police themselves.
You've been a political leader for a long time. Do you support it up to now?
We have a party political position. We didn't support 50-50 recruitment. And as you know, David, in his position as Justice Minister, wasn't in favour of 50-50 recruitment. And I don't believe that that is necessarily the solution to the problem. We need to, first of all, and this is work that's ongoing within the department, within the police and within the policing board, we need to identify why we're not attracting significant numbers of people, not just from the minority tradition in Northern Ireland, but from a whole series of minorities, whether it's the LGBT community, ethnic minority community, people with disabilities and women. So we need to look at why we're not attracting those people, what we can do to get those people to apply, but also to retain those people in the service when they come into the service. Now, 50-50 recruitment is a very blunt tool. And it's, if you like, that's one of the things that's there and it's available. It's not one that I would be keen or comfortable to deploy.
But you're not ruling out.
I would have to reflect on that in light of circumstances. But what I want to do, and what I've talked to the police and others about doing, is asking the more difficult question. Why are we in a situation where we need to look at that? Because, of course, the risk with 50-50 recruitment that you'll appreciate is if you can only draw people out of the pool of applicants at a rate of 50-50, you may not be able to fill the gap in policing in the kind of time you want, unless you're actually drawing in the applications. So it's getting the applications, it's getting the people trained that is the absolute key. And that's where our focus has to be, getting the right people. We went through, just as an anecdote, we had a similar situation in Alliance where we said there weren't enough women on executive. And people said, let's have a quota. And I said, how would that help? I said, every woman who put their name forward to stand for executive got selected. I said, the issue isn't about the process of putting them on the executive. The issue is about lack of supply. So let's do something else. Let's go out and talk to the women about why we want them on executive and get them to put their name forward. We redress the imbalance within 2 years. So I think that there are lots of creative things that we can do, short of that very blunt tool that might be of assistance in ensuring that the objective, which is to have a police service that reflects the community, can be achieved.
I noticed you tweeting over the weekend thanking the senior police for giving you a briefing and taking the time to do so. Did they give you a sense as to the level of threat in this country from elements that will not want to see an executive restored and a government moving forward? What's the current threat level?
The current threat level is, as it has always been, it is serious. And I think all of us are conscious that is the case. And we need to work hard to ensure that is addressed. That threat is it's a complex picture of both crime and politically motivated violence, and we need to address that. And it's one of the things that I've been talking to the department in terms of, for example, the tackling paramilitaries piece of work that the executive is involved in, and what role the Department of Justice can play in driving that forward and supporting the police in their work to ensure that people are kept safe. Because ultimately, we want to have a community that is shared, that is safe, and where people feel that we're moving forward as opposed to sliding backwards. And it's partly my role to contribute to that and to lead work around that. Okay. And that's what I want to focus on.
And one of the stories, finally, one of the stories developing this morning is that Colm Eastwood has told Radio Foyle that there was a cross-party understanding Patsy McGlone would be the speaker. Had your party that understanding?
Well, that was our understanding. Not it hadn't been discussed in detail during the current negotiations, but in previous rounds of talks, our understanding was that we were going to, if you like, rotate the speakership and allow that speakership to rotate amongst the parties. And it would have been, I think, appropriate in those circumstances for Patsy McGlone to have the opportunity to serve as Speaker. He had the experience, as did, for example, Roy Beggs, Deputy Speaker, and it would have been our understanding, certainly, that would be the case. But, you know, at the end of the day, we supported Patsy.
So has an agreement been broken?
Right. Well, there was no agreement in these talks. It wasn't actually debated or discussed during these talks. I was working off the basis of previous discussions that had been had some time ago and the kind of understanding that we had, but also I think in terms of what we would have liked to have seen, because I actually believe that it's important that not all power is concentrated with two main parties. I was disappointed this occasion that it wasn't Patsy who got the role, but I'm delighted that both he and Roy Beggs and Christopher Salford will be in their role as deputy speakers. And I have no doubt whatsoever, having sat under Alex Maskey's chairmanship as a member of Belfast City Council, that he will be both a formidable but also a very personable chair of the Assembly and ambassador for the work that the Assembly does.
Okay.
So it's no reflection on the individuals involved, but I personally and the party felt that it was, if you like, Patsy McGlone's turn and that he had more than earned that role.
I was going to say Naomi, but I should really say Minister. Thank you very much indeed for your time this morning.